Hello, Silver City and Grant County. You are listening to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. You can tune into Earth Matters every Tuesday and Thursday at 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. on 89.1 FM, as well as listen to podcasts of each of our shows on gmcr.org. This is what community radio looks like and sounds like. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. The New Mexico Wilderness Alliance is a nonprofit organization dedicated to the protection, restoration, and continued enjoyment of New Mexico's wildlands and wilderness areas, including our beloved Gila. On today's program, we have Nancy Kaminsky, Sarah Boyette, and Lisa Fields, all from the Southwestern New Mexico Audubon Society, based here in Silver City. Welcome to Earth Matters, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
So let's just start off with a quick round of introductions. Nancy, it's my understanding that you're the president of the board of the Southwestern chapter of the New Mexico Audubon Society. Is that right?
That I am.
And how long have you been in this role?
Since I got here about 13 years ago.
13 years ago. And Sarah, you're the vice president?
I am.
Of the board?
Yes. I've been on the board for 3 years and vice president for about a year and a half.
And Lisa, you're not on the board, are you?
Yes, I am.
Oh, you are. What's your position, Lisa?
I'm on the conservation committee along with Nancy.
Okay. And my understanding is that there's the National Audubon Society, and then there's like the state chapter of New Mexico Audubon Society, and then we have the Southwestern chapter. How long has this chapter been around, and what is its relation to, say, the state organization and then the national organization?
Well, the national organization has been around forever. I don't have the exact date on that, but here in New Mexico, the Southwestern New Mexico Audubon Society was founded in 1968, and it marks the beginning of the Audubon presence in New Mexico. They were formed in 1968 as a response to the Hooker-Connor Dam project on the Gila River, and also the indiscriminate killing of birds and tree cutting they found in the forest. The first officers of the chapter were all women. Mrs. J.P. Gibson, the vice president was Alma Strachpin, the treasurer was Linda Blake, and publicity, Mrs. Fred McCormick. And they had found in their time living here that they just needed to do more, so they decided to set up a chapter here with the National Audubon Society. Since then, other chapters were formed, but there are only four left in New Mexico. Once we designated the Randall Davey Audubon Center in Santa Fe, National Audubon then set up the State Office of Audubon in Santa Fe in the 1990s. This was long after our local chapter.
Yeah, so that's almost 50 years now that the Southwestern chapter has been engaged and around. That's quite a legacy, you guys. Do you have anything special coming up for that anniversary in a couple of years?
Actually, we've already started planning for that, and we're really looking to have maybe some national, even international figures in the conservation movement come to Silver City and help us celebrate, because where we are right now so reflects the impetus for the founding of the National Audubon Society, which I'll be happy to share some more about with you. So I think it's really cause for celebration, and we intend to do exactly that.
I think that's a wonderful idea. You know, as you're probably aware, in October of last year, we had the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act Conference in Albuquerque, which is a huge deal. I think it would be fantastic to see some type of big celebration in Silver City and Grant County for Audubon's role and effort. You've been fighting this damming and diversion stuff of the Gila River for decades, and we're still doing it. So, I look forward to hearing more about that and hopefully being a part of that, too. So how long has the National Audubon Society been around, though?
Okay. Nancy said, well, I'm not sure, but forever. Well, actually, that's pretty apt, because in terms of the environmental movement, something founded in 1896, which is not our national, I'll briefly fill you in on a little bit of the prehistory of the National Audubon Society. Starting in, you know, after the Civil War and certainly up through the turn of the 20th century, there was just huge decimation of species, particularly birds. Species that had elegant plumage like egrets and herons. for whatever strange reason that foments women's fashions, wearing dead birds on your head seem to have taken off in this period. And so the hunt for fancy feathers and whole birds just was incredibly destructive to wildlife numbers. And at one point, I read somewhere in the literature that a pound of egret feathers was worth more than a pound of gold. And
wow.
What really started it all was was a group in Massachusetts in 1896 that founded an organization to try to bring awareness to the problem of the decimation of birds. And it was in 1900 that they suggested that instead of the traditional Christmas Day side hunt, which was simply enormous numbers of people going out shooting every bird they could find, but particularly birds with flashy plumage, that this group decided instead of shooting birds, let's count them. And so that became the impetus for the Christmas bird count, which has now been going on for well over a century. And just to briefly fill you in on the rest of the history of the National Audubon Society, although I would like to point this out, this is something that moved me very much, was to learn that when the Association of Audubon Societies, this is before the National was actually founded, there was the big push to start creating wildlife refuges, and the very first one was at Pelican Island, Florida. Well, this organization of Audubon Societies actually hired wardens to go and protect the breeding bird colonies. At least two of those wardens were murdered because of they were keeping the trade. And so I think what struck me is that now, you know, more than 100 years later, we think about Africa with, you know, these
rhinos,
elephants, people that are losing their lives to try to protect species. Well, that was happening even back then, so I really did not know that Audubon has martyrs to the cause.
That is fascinating. I wonder if, like, the slaughter of the passenger pigeon maybe also had something to do with Audubon being formed. I think that was around the same time frame when the last passenger pigeon was
absolutely
died in a zoo somewhere.
Yeah, it was during this period that people began to see that they were losing entire species, but particularly the passenger pigeon, which used to blacken the skies for days on end with the literally billions of birds. By 1914, the final passenger pigeon held in captivity, I believe it was at a zoo in, I want to say, Cincinnati.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Anyway, the last passenger pigeon named Martha died in 1914. And just to quickly give you a couple more little items to bring you up to the present, some other really good things happened there, during that time period. Right before that, New York State passed the Audubon Plumage Act, which made it illegal to possess or trade in migratory bird plumage. 1918, President Wilson signed the Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Which was huge in helping to protect, you know, migratory birds. You know, our history comes right up to the present, and I'll talk more in the program about bird counts and citizen science and all those kinds of things. But if anyone who's interested in knowing a little bit more about National Audubon, just go to their website, www.audubon.org, and you'll find a lot more interesting information.
Thank you, Sarah. The mission of the Audubon Society, the National Audubon Society, the state chapters and the smaller local chapters, it's obviously for the conservation of bird species, but is there a sort of like a mission statement that focuses on like habitat, wetlands, flyways? I mean, what's the overarching mission of the Audubon Society? How does that translate down to the smaller local groups across the country?
Well, let me just read you our mission statement, and then I can elaborate a little bit on that. Our mission, this is National Audubon, but certainly this devolves down to the state and local chapters as well. Our mission is to conserve and restore natural ecosystems focusing on birds, other wildlife, and their habitats for the benefit of humanity and the Earth's biological diversity. So with that in mind, Audubon is one of the national and international environmental groups that while, yes, we're focused on birds, we are still seeing using birds as the canary in the coal mine. That metaphor is still so apt because we are finding that as bird habitat goes, you know, so goes biological diversity, so goes ecological health. And so we have a number of programs, which, again, I'll focus on a little bit later in the program, that are helping with conservation, as will Nancy and Lisa.
Yeah, you just said something there that's really important. I think most people probably don't know that bird species health, the health of birds in an ecosystem, really is tantamount to how the overall ecosystem is doing. And most folks don't even think about that. It's kind of like if you have a problem of cats outside everywhere in rural areas killing birds. That's, you know, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something you guys talk about. Maybe we can get into that a little bit later. But can you maybe just speak a little bit more about to the awareness issue of the importance of birds and protecting bird habitat to the overall health of ecological functions?
Nancy.
I don't know how much I can add to what Sarah has already said. But the program or the chapter realized immediately that there was a need for more education and information to the public. We already had all the information we needed about what happens out there when birds disappear from all the history. And so the original, mission statement, whatever, was to further the preservation locally of wildlife and natural areas. And to further that mission, we intend to begin a program to educate people on the dangers of feral cats. They kill billions of birds.
Billions.
Billions of birds. It's stunning. It really is. Birds are also killed on glass buildings and things like that. But I think the number one problem is feral cats. And, of course, Silver City has a lot of feral cats.
Right.
I think Donna Louder did an article in the Desert Exposure a few years ago and found that there were probably more cats in Silver City than there are people.
You're kidding me.
No, it's a horrible problem here. It really is.
That is ridiculous.
Well, they also spread disease, and that hurts all kinds of other wildlife. And it's definitely a negative impact on the ecosystem to have feral animals of any kind.
Public service announcement. Yeah. Get your cats spayed and neutered.
Keep them inside.
We intend to start this project to help people understand how dangerous it is to leave these cats out for a variety of reasons, health, birds, everything. And just like our predecessors did, we're going to use outreach and education. You can't try to teach a cat lover to destroy a cat. So there needs to be a better solution to the problem. And we intend to work on that soon.
You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM, and we'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's program, we have with us Nancy Kaminsky, Sarah Boyette, and Lisa Fields, all with the Southwestern New Mexico Audubon Society. And we spent that first segment just kind of getting a little bit of overview, brief background on all the great history and work that Audubon nationally has been doing, and they've been around for well over a century. And we started to talk a little bit about outreach and education, so maybe we can just kind of keep that conversation going and give our listeners some examples of some of the outreach and educational efforts that your chapter is doing here in this part of the great state of New Mexico.
Well, first I'd like to start with something that's beyond our local chapter, but certainly our local chapter is very involved in. And I'm sure you've all heard the saying that people aren't going to protect or take care of something that they don't understand. And along that line, Audubon designated three important bird areas over a 60-mile stretch of the Gila River. And this is a way to bring people in. I think most people are aware, maybe they're not, that there's millions of dollars that are part of the local economy from people who specifically love to look at birds and watch them in their natural habitat. And so this is very well promoted. It's not only important recognition for the over 200 bird species that either live or migrate through that area of the Gila River that's designated as an important bird area. It's also, that designation is also important for resource protection efforts and for research. The outreach, of course, is really great. It's not only got the economic impact, but it gets people out. When you go out to an area where the birds are in that natural environment and you see everything else that's there, that's creating that understanding that then builds to the caring and getting people passionate, hopefully, about protecting those resources. This location is on a state birding map that's been put together that's pretty widely distributed at various tourist venues, at National Forest Office, you know, the public offices they have where people stop in for information, and at our own Silver City Visitors Center. It also brings a lot of people with interest in the natural world to one of the most outstanding places in our region for ecological diversity and great beauty.
Now, you mentioned there was three Gila River important bird areas. Where exactly are those located? Do you know?
Two that I'm really familiar with would be it's the Bill Evans Lake Road that then continues on, and I'm not remembering the name of that road, that goes down to very accessible by foot to the Gila River. People also hunt and fish. It's very good access for both of those activities as well. And you can take a regular passenger car down that road to there. You don't necessarily need high clearance. And those two areas are probably, I don't know if they're a mile or so apart, maybe, a little further by road. There are signs. There's a New Mexico Birding Trail logo signs that are impossible to miss. I believe they have a roadrunner on them. Is that correct? Yes. The third one is escaping me, Sarah. Nancy, do you know where that third one is?
I'm thinking it's higher up. Isn't it higher up toward the wilderness? I mean, I'm thinking the third one is to the north.
Yes, yeah. Turkey Creek area.
She's got the birding trail.
Oh, great.
Sarah will be able to answer that question.
Momentarily, yeah. But it sounds like that first one you were talking about is the Gila Middle Box. Is that right?
It's in that Middle Box area we know so very well.
Yeah, the Gila Middle Box is a National Forest inventoried roadless area that could one day maybe become wilderness.
Wilderness, yes. And again, that is these three important bird areas are over a 60-mile stretch of the river. So just think about, you know, the ecology and the study that's going on, you know, in that area, the diversity of the ecology. And
do we know who designates the important bird area? Is that a state designation? Is that a federal designation? Is it something the Forest Service did? Or
I believe Audubon.
My understanding is that goes through national, that local people will identify an important area. That kind of goes up the chain of review, and it's the National Audubon Society that then determines if indeed that area can be designated an important bird area.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So are there any other kind of like candidate areas that we might be aware of in our region that could qualify as important bird areas? Because as we talked about a little earlier, there's over 200 species of birds that come to the Gila region, which is by far the highest in the state of New Mexico. There's got to be other areas like the San Francisco River, Mineral Creek, Whitewater Creek. I mean, the list could go really on and on and on in terms of candidate areas to be nominated for important bird areas. So do we have candidates out there? Is there a process that sort of goes through to get candidates nominated?
It's up to us. It's up to us. And like your wildlands inventory, it could be a great project. I'm afraid most of our efforts right now are still on the Gila River. And I'm thinking that once Sarah takes over as president in September, the ex-president will have more time to go back to just conservation issues. I hold two seats right now, and it's a little difficult. Mm. But that's a great idea. Thanks. I'm going to look into that.
Well, if you know, I'll extend the invitation to you guys here on the radio that as a part of the wilderness inventories that we do, I think it would be great to incorporate bird inventories as well to maybe look at some of these important bird area nominations. I think the overlap makes complete sense.
Perfect.
You know, we just talked about the Gila Middle Box. That's already an important bird area and possesses outstanding, remarkable wilderness characteristics. So it seems like a natural win-win. So we can talk offline after that a little bit more.
And bird counts are done along the length of the Gila at specific dates and time. So I think it's just a matter of working on better coordinating our information together, for sure.
So what other conservation efforts is the group involved in locally?
Well, one thing that we have done is initiated a Gila River Advocacy Task Force, which includes several of our board members and general members and other folks who aren't necessarily Audubon members in the spirit of all working together. And I think the initiative pretty much started off in the spring of 2013 with a lot of help from New Mexico State Audubon staff to produce a 2-page position paper actually stating that we are against the proposed diversion of the Gila River and giving a good explanation as to why and what the harm could be. And listed, you know, specific negative impacts. And at the end, just two sides of a page, and it had a map of the area where the proposed diversion was and the areas that would be affected. And we had actions for people to take. And at that point, it was, you know, contacting legislators, and the names and addresses were there. And that was just the beginning. And we kept going, trying to put our heads together on building awareness among the community about the issue and trying to keep facts at the forefront, which was always a struggle, given what sort of information tended to be promulgated. Several ads were placed with a collaborative funding grant with monies from the state Audubon to express our anti-diversion viewpoint. And then a banner that looked much like that colorful ad was carried in the 2014 Fourth of July parade here in town. That banner was also displayed at AWSA meetings, and it was set up on a busy corner of town here and also out on Route 180 near Gila during two time periods that were like within a week of these AWSA meetings to try to help build awareness and attention. And then there were some written initiatives. Several of us took turns submitting letters to the editor to both local and statewide press outlets on a timely basis, covering different aspects of the issue in depth as much as you can in an LTE. And we had a sign-up sheet, so it was you sign up to be the letter writer of the month. And then as issues heated up, those efforts intensified, and there were probably months when there were more than one letter, probably more than five or six letters that were published. And then our board treasurer, Terry Timmy, did the lion's share of the work, creating a 1-page folded brochure. So there's actually 4 pages of information. Questions to consider about the AWSA proposal to divert the Gila River. And it's very informative, but it's in like bulleted point format, so it's very readable. It's organized by category, and it covers environmental impacts, engineering concerns, economic concerns. It was thoroughly fact-checked and updated at least twice. About 400 copies were distributed at AWSA meetings and other public events, because that's one thing that Audubon tries to be quite a presence in the community as much as we can, given, you know, fairly small cadre of volunteers, to be a presence at things like Earth Day and 4th of July and such, so that we can hand out materials, answer questions, and engage the public. Then another thing that was more recent was that a few of us actually met with Senator Morales and presented him with some information that we had researched quite thoroughly before we did that, so he could have that before the 2015 legislative session. And what this was we developed a series of 1-page fact sheets, with each one focused on a topic of the proposed diversion. The approach was myth-busting. One is about what we do and do not know about the Mimbrus Basin aquifer. Another one was about regional agriculture. It hones in on a very poorly done study commissioned by the AWSA that was used to justify a perceived need for water, and it is not accurate. The environmental impacts of a diversion with listing of the threatened and endangered species was another one. The Bureau of Reclamation's economic analysis of all the proposals that passed the Tier 2 process and showed that the diversion proposals were simply not economically feasible and would cost far more than what would be gained.
Now, Lisa, you mentioned some threatened endangered species. What are those bird species that would be impacted by the diversion?
Well, I'll start off and you guys can fill in. The southwest willow flycatcher, the particular population of the western yellow-billed cuckoo, because in other parts of the country it's not threatened, but here it is, and we have a unique population here.
Well, we have a little mnemonic for the seven species that are, and not just birds, those that are threatened, endangered, or candidates for the endangered species list. And I believe it goes two birds, two snakes, two fish, and a frog. So, as Lisa mentioned, the two birds are the southwest willow flycatcher and the western population of the yellow-billed cuckoo. The you'll have to help me with the snakes here, Nancy.
Oh,
the narrow-headed garter snake and the Mexican garter snake.
The fish are the loach minnow and the spiked dace.
Yep.
Yes. And the frog is the Chiricahua leopard frog.
Yay.
So I guess it's pretty, it ought to be obvious to proponents of diversion that it's hard enough to get through the NEPA's process, National Environmental Policy Act review process, to mitigate for one, we got seven.
Right.
Yeah, and then I would encourage people to go to our website, because it's not just that we have a lot of information there, but the way it's organized, you can pretty quickly click on something and read a page and see some great photos and feel pretty well informed without having to wade through hours and hours of stuff. And, of course, those fact sheets that I mentioned are all there on the website.
Thank you, Lisa. You guys are doing some fantastic work, more work than I thought you guys were actually doing, so it's really nice to hear all about it. So thank you so much for all your efforts. You are listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM. We'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Members Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's program, we've been talking with Nancy Kaminsky, Sarah Boyette, and Lisa Fields of the Southwestern New Mexico Audubon Society, and we just got a laundry list of fantastic work that your local chapter is doing. But I wanted to kind of circle back to something we walked away from, and that was the state and national support of the Audubon Society for the efforts here in the Gila. What are they helping you guys to do? And yeah.
Okay, we are very fortunate to have an absolutely fabulous state organization whose staff are so supportive of us. They have helped us with our Audubon Task Force. They helped us with formatting our fact sheets. As a matter of fact, they actually passed our information on the battle over the Gila to National Audubon Society, which put out an action alert, which I can't even tell you how many thousands and millions of people that goes to, but that was all based on the work that we did here locally, but with the help of our state organization, that information got passed up. Part of that was also supported by the Western Rivers Action Network, which is basically centered in Arizona, Colorado, and New Mexico, and its mission is to improve and protect or to manage water better from the Colorado and the Rio Grande. So we've had some wonderful support both statewide and nationally, and I simply cannot thank especially our state organization enough.
Yeah, because this issue really is of national importance when it comes to bird species, quite frankly, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
absolutely.
What is the total number of bird species in the Gila? Lisa, I think you said it earlier.
Usually it's listed as about 200. You know, come through there. They're not all residents all the time.
And that includes songbirds as well as birds of prey, right?
Yep.
Do we have a list of, or a sense of the list of birds of prey that sort of like really thrive in this ecosystem down here?
Well, the common blackhawk is certainly the probably prime example of a raptor whose needs for habitat are threatened, and that's one of the reasons why the Gila is so important, because it has one of the most intact, healthy riparian systems in the entire West, and particularly in the Southwest, which is the home range of the common blackhawk. But there are many other species that come through either on migration or actually use the Gila as breeding territory. So, yes, and later, if you would like for me to mention the raptor count, I can certainly do that when we talk about bird counts.
I was actually just going to ask you about that. So that's just great transition.
Well, very good then. We here in Grant County and southwestern New Mexico have an absolute embarrassment of riches of bird counts. I practically don't have enough fingers on my hand to keep up with them all, but I do want to mention, of course, the Christmas bird count, which occurs every December. It actually is over about a 2 to 3 week period during which the count day, or even people who can't make it for the organized count with the team, can report sightings during that window of opportunity. As I mentioned earlier, Nathan, the Christmas bird count was an absolutely amazing, shall we say, marketing tool to get people away from killing birds and to start counting them and caring about them and preserving them. We've been doing the Christmas bird count here in Grant County for something like 53 years. And, you know, things change, you know, from year to year, but that's the beauty of a bird count, is that it gives you a snapshot by which you can compare prior trends, and you can start to see where some things are going. This past year, we were lucky to see 93 different species in the Christmas bird count, but I'll mention some of the other bird counts. The first week in December is the raptor count, and that's one where that's basically a driving bird count. We cover everything from, I think, as far north as Catron County, down to Doña Ana, clear into the Boot Heel, and that's basically driving the highways and byways of southern New Mexico and counting every raptor we see. So that's in early December, and then there is the Silver City Christmas bird count, which usually occurs around the 14th through the 20th. That is centered in right here in Silver City. The Gila bird count usually occurs about 2 weeks later, and that basically counts birds from the West Fork of the Gila up by the cliff dwellings all the way down to Verdon. So that is a count of all the birds on the Gila, which is repeated in the spring for migratory birds on the Gila. That is usually the first weekend in May. And then the migratory bird count, which Dr. Julian Lee heads up on the second weekend in May, that information is not only goes to Audubon, but to the Cornell Ornithological Lab, and those folks keep track of things. It's really been remarkable to see what's happening now with the information that we're getting from the bird count, particularly the fact that bird species, at least 50% of bird species, are showing some kind of decline. And National Audubon last summer, put out a major study on birds and climate change. And what they found from all of these 100 years of counts is that up to half of the species are going to be threatened or extinct by 2080. So this is a real wake-up call, but it's also, something to be proud of, to join if you possibly can. What I would say about bird counts is that they require people with all kinds of skills, not only good birding skills, but just, being able to keep a little checklist and make sure that you do indeed count every bird, and it's a great way to learn. I really can't urge you all enough, listeners, to try to get involved in a bird count. Karen Beckenbach coordinates our Christmas bird count, and Roland Shook, both the raptor count and the two Gila counts, and as I mentioned, Julian Lee, the migratory. But there is also the great backyard bird count, which occurs in February every year, and that is so easy. You simply look out your back window at your bird feeder or your yard for as little as 15 minutes. Go online and report what you've seen. And this is an amazing tool now with the internet, because what it does is give a nation, continent-wide snapshot of exactly the state of the birds right then and there. And some interesting things show up. In 2014, we really could document the eruption of snowy owls from the north, because so many people were seeing them right in their own backyards so far south. So, again, a good way for people to participate in citizen science. And I'm going to get off my soapbox here in just one moment, if you'll allow me to carry on just a moment more. I myself get so upset at climate change deniers that, you know, I mostly want to punch the wall or something. But then I say, no, the thing to do is go out and do the science, because that is irrefutable. You know, Audubon now has over 100 years of records, and those records don't lie. You know, those are telling us once again that we're in trouble. We need to do something about it. So it's a way to be positive.
So, Sarah, to get you back on your soapbox just for a moment, because you gave us a lot of information there, you said that one of the main reasons for doing these bird counts is to get a pulse on the health of the bird species and the populations, and that you can sort of track the trends. And you gave us a stat there that says about half of all the species are in decline, and there could be threatened and endangered species or extinct species in 50 years, essentially. Do we have a sense of how our region is faring in terms of the health and population of our bird species in this region from the bird counts that you've just talked about?
Actually, yes. We are looking at ranges of more than 40 species are extending northward. So that's right here in Grant County. That's telling us that things are getting hotter sooner. And so many birds are moving north to breed. But of course, like everything else in nature, it's all tied together. And birds have to, those that depend on fruiting or flowering plants, like our hummingbirds, you know, it takes the plants a while to catch up with the fact that the birds are coming earlier. And so everything is tending to get out of sync. And that's the huge reason for, you know, as well as just habitat loss, it is climate change heating the planet up so that breeding ranges, feeding ranges, and even wintering ranges are all shifting dramatically.
Now, is there anything that, besides participating in the bird count or, you know, or lobbying your congressman to pass climate change legislation or something along those lines, is there something that each individual person could do in their yard, for example, that would help birds or would help, you know, other, like, butterflies and things of that nature that sort of tie into everything? Like, is there anything that you can do in your own backyard that any person could do that would help birds out, given the state of affairs that we're faced with right here?
Right.
Well, certainly you can plant native plant species that are intended to grow here, and those will provide nectar for butterflies and for other pollinators as well, and certainly food for birds, things that produce berries, or even just habitat, even things that don't necessarily produce fruit will provide habitat. And that information is, I think, pretty readily available, and certainly the our local Gila Native Plant Society website would provide that really well. But I'm sure National Audubon Society or our site would have links that could connect people with that. Water conservation is extremely important. We really don't need lawns in an area like this, and certainly they're not going to do anything for our local bird species.
But would you, like, recommend, say, like, putting out a bird feeder or something like that to provide food? Or is that something, like, you don't want to get into? Like, that would actually do more harm than good.
You know, I've never personally fed birds, because what I see out there is that the habitat is what's really missing. So I would be much more likely to provide them with a nesting box or something like that. And if I was going to feed them, I would plant something they wanted, period. I'm not sure how well, we're treating the birds by just giving them food. It's one tiny speck of what they need. And I see as their worst enemy now in the world is habitat loss and destruction. That's number one.
So plant blue gramma grass in your backyard and front yard.
Nathan, I'll just mention one other thing, and that is as scientists, ornithologists are starting to understand more about how birds navigate, they certainly do understand that light has a huge factor, and this is true not only for birds but for moths. And so any kind of outdoor lighting should be focused downward. You do not want lights that shine up into the sky, because those do tend to get birds off in their navigational ability. So that's another thing to be mindful of, is to have any outdoor lighting and cover windows at night, because so many migratory birds fly, cover these huge distances when it's dark. And so any light source, you know, they all evolved their patterns and their knowledge before electrical lights. And so we confuse them. So it's important to keep that outdoor light to a minimum for their sake.
You know, right now we have a very confused condor. There's a condor in Los Alamos, New Mexico. California condor, absolutely guaranteed it's there.
He's got a tag, too.
Yeah, he's tagged.
Yeah, it's interesting.
He's from the Peregrine Fund, you know, they released him, but not anywhere near here.
I had no idea that thing about lights and how that could confuse birds. That's a great little piece of advice. So turn your lights off at night when you're going to bed, folks. You're listening to Earth Matters on KURU 89.1 FM, and we'll be right back after a quick break. Welcome back to Earth Matters on your Gila Membris Community Radio Station, KURU 89.1 FM. My name is Nathan Newcomer, and I'm the Gila Grassroots Organizer with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and I'm your host for today's show. On today's program, we've been talking with the lovely ladies of the Southwestern New Mexico Audubon Society, Nancy Kaminsky, Sarah Boyette, and Lisa Fields. Thank you all so much for coming in today. This has been a very lively discussion, and this is our last segment, unfortunately. I feel like we've covered quite a bit of ground. I think we could probably go on for another hour, but we've only got about 15 minutes left. So one thing I wanted to get back to was some of the regular programs and outreach that Audubon is involved in, beyond the sort of bird counts that we talked about, which are great. But I've seen things like birds and brews, and, you know, like a 3 to 7 day notice to go on a hike real quickly or something like that to go count some birds. So Lisa, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay. Well, every month, and it's usually on the first Saturday of the month, there is a field trip, and people meet at the Fine Arts Center at the college here in town and carpool. And if you live along the route that the trip is heading out to, that's very easy to arrange to join along the way. And most of these have had a birding focus, but we're beginning to broaden the range quite a bit on that. There are always skilled birders involved, so it's a great opportunity to learn. And you don't ever feel like you need to be an expert. It's a very welcoming environment. And the idea is to everybody is absolutely welcome. And if birding isn't necessarily, you know, totally your thing, there's going to be other things that you will learn about and enjoy being part of on all of these outings.
See, I'm a person that I love birds, but I am a terrible birder. I have so much admiration for people that can hear a bird whistle something over there. They're like, oh, that's such and such. Or they'll see a bird hop up onto a fence and be like, oh, just see that little piece of orange puff under its tail. That's that. And it's like, how the heck do you even figure that stuff out? And it sounds like maybe these trips that you're talking about at the beginning of the month is a great way to kind of dial into that and get little tips and advice
Absolutely.
On how to do that.
And a part of that is that you're seeing the birds in their natural habitat. And this really helps you to remember them and learn them. How do you memorize things that you're seeing pictures of in a book? You know, you really have to see them in their place. And then you get a sense of the interaction. And for those of us who are also soil and plant junkies, there's always, you know, that whole aspect of you're in these amazing environments that we have so much of in this area.
Soil and plant junkies. That's funny. What else, Lisa? What other programs are you guys doing?
Well, one thing that we did that we have access to some grant funding. It's called Collaborative Funding Grant through our state Audubon. And Terry, Timmy, and I kind of took the main role, but had a lot of help from many other people. And to try to address the gap in citizens' knowledge and understanding about our local water resources, with the idea that people need to be informed to participate in the decision-making process, and this whole AWSA issue is just one of possibly other big water use controversies coming our way, water being the big number one issue around the world, and that's not going to change. So we got some funds to help with materials, and we created a PowerPoint presentation full of photos and data, but it's also designed to include discussion. So it's not just sitting there looking at slides and facts. And it covers water resource terminology, local water resources, their characteristics, historical and more recent water use in our region by sector, a lot about conservation, positive things that can be done, what has been done, what more is needed. And we got this out in front of several groups, including a two-hour Will class that we taught. And it's available. We can custom tailor it and shorten it. Terry took it out to other venues in the state as well. So that's one thing that I think that's going to lead into further work. We're always coming up with something, some kind of outreach. One of our board members, Jackie Blurton, created an activity book for children that helps them learn about birds and their habitat needs. It's a bird conservation activity book. 100 of those have been distributed, so we're going to keep going with that. I already mentioned the field trips. I want to give a quick mention to a recognition program that we do, Birds Mean Business. And that's an initiative of Southwest New Mexico Audubon and the Western Rivers Action Network, where an award is given each year to a local business that supports birders and environmental conservation. In 2014, Mitch Hellman and Star Belsky, owner-proprietors of Alotta Gelato, received that award. Mitch and Star also host our board meetings, our task force meetings, and they just generally do a lot for the community. They also have excellent gelato, and that's a shout-out to sign up to be an Audubon board member, at least. Come and visit in on one of our meetings.
And the meetings last 1 hour.
Yeah, it's funny when we first got into this.
Which is so important.
When we got in the studio, I heard you guys glowing about how you love going to your board meetings. I never hear anybody say that. So that is something special if your board meetings are kicking it out. Yeah,
it's an incredible board. Yeah. I've been there, like I say, as long as I've been in New Mexico, and I've never seen a better board. I've never been part of a better board. They're all great people and very active. I also wanted to make sure everybody knows about other things, other conservation things that we're involved in. Since 2005, we've worked on travel management plan with an effort on our part to rein in unmanaged recreation. Nobody's trying to close off the forest to anyone. We would just like everybody to treat it respectfully. We've also been involved in the reintroduction of native species, such as the very controversial lobo, doing well at this point, by the way. Over 100 animals in Arizona and New Mexico now. We've always been great supporters of the Gila River Festival. This year it's on September 24th through the 27th. We've taken part in the Gila Science Forum. We support Gila Wildlife Rescue. We've done a myriad amount of things with the educational trunk teaching all over Grant County. I think we took that into Luna County a little bit. We work endlessly on anything that would save the Gila River from diversions, education, Arizona Water Settlement Act meetings. For how long? It's been an awfully long time going to those meetings, and sometimes they were rather contentious. And we've also done work with the legislature. We go to the roundhouse. We speak to our reps. Mm-hmm. We stand up at meetings and speak about what we want in this area. We also do fun things. Our First Friday programs, our program director, Karen Breckenbach, is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. She has made our programs, our First Friday programs. Years ago when I started, might have had 10 or 15 people in the room, and now we have 50. She does a wonderful job. She has a wide range of friends that she talks into doing this. May 1st is our next one. It's in Harlan Hall on WNMU campus at 7 p.m. Brian Dalton, everybody loves Brian Dalton from our field trips. He's our number one field trip leader. He's going to speak on the origin of bird names. this will be fun.
That will be fun.
It will. We also do, of course, the bird counts. We do field trips on the first Fridays, or the first Saturday. And, of course, birds and brews. Very popular. We need a larger venue. Very popular.
You need a larger venue?
We do.
Yeah, we outgrew the toad.
I outgrew the back room at
I'm not sure where you're going to go.
I have to say that we are victims of our own success with Birds and Brews. It's an idea that we just sort of heard about, that in addition to the more formal monthly programs up at Harlan Hall on the first Friday of every middle of the year month, Birds and Brews was something that could be a smaller, sort of auxiliary, less formal kind of thing.
So much for that.
Well, I don't know if it's the birds or the brews, but that's creating such a great success. But let me just, for our listeners, say that Birds and Brews meets in the back room at the Little Toad Creek Brewery, corner of Bullard and Broadway, on the fourth Thursday of every month, with the exception of November and December. So 10 months out of the year, we have our meetings. They start at 5:15, but the program typically starts about 5:30. And we have had a real variety of things, particularly thanks to some of our well-traveled members who have brought back programs about the birds of Africa, birds of Australia. We've had great travelogues to Alaska, more scientific kinds of things, like Dr. Lee talking about why birds are dinosaurs. That will be forthcoming. However, we are going to have to start to limit the attendance, so we will have a sort of RSVP list, and the first 30 people can get in the room. But beyond that, we'll need to close it down. But
maybe we should turn it into a street dance.
Oh, well, now that's a possibility. That's a possibility.
Close off the block for Birds and Brews. I like it.
Anyway, I think that we're doing great things here with Audubon. We're just delighted that people come to our activities, and we are always welcoming new members. To become a member of Southwestern New Mexico Audubon, simply go to our website for the membership form. That's SWNMAUDUBON. That's Southwestern New Mexico Audubon.org. Our membership is only $15 a year, and the money stays right here locally. And again, we would just welcome anyone that wants to come and learn more about Audubon and the wider world that Audubon opens a door to.
We've got about a couple of minutes left before we have to sign off. Is there anything else you want our listeners to know? We covered a lot of territory and ground today. I really just want to thank you for taking the time to come in. But yeah, go ahead, Lisa.
I want to just stress that everybody is welcome to the programs. Everybody is welcome to contact any of us. That information is on the website. And maybe you'll decide to become a member, and that would be great, and we'd love it. But everybody is welcome, whether or not they're a member.
And people can also pick up our monthly newsletter, bi-monthly newsletter, The Ravens, at the public library, at the visitor center, all around town. You'll find that. And that would give you a lot more information on our chapter, our particular chapter. I also want to send out a thank you to Terry Mendelson. If you go to SWNMAAudubon.org, you're going to see a fabulous website. We could never do what we do, which is a lot, without the volunteers. I can't say enough about Grant County volunteers. They blow me away.
Thank you so much, Nancy, Sarah, Lisa, for joining us on Earth Matters today. It has been a real treat to talk with you about the Southwestern New Mexico Audubon Society and all the fantastic work you're doing. So thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak to your listeners.
Thank you, Nathan.
You're welcome. Many thanks also to Kyle Johnson, our technical engineer and all-around radio guru.
Yay, Kyle.
I'd also like to thank all of our listeners for your community support and dedication. You can tune in to Earth Matters every Tuesday and Thursday at 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. on 89.1 FM, as well as listen to podcasts of each show on gmcr.org. This is what your community radio looks like and sounds like. Have a fantastic day, everyone.